Welcome to the West Coast Project podcast for Orange is the New Black, Season 2, Episode 7, Comic Sans. My name is Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
How's it going?
It's going good. How's it going with you?
You got a tugboat going by or something?
I have people actually up running through the house right now, so I'm like sequestered in a room with a sign on the door not to disturb me. We'll see how that goes. We're doing a little earlier than normal, so.
So you're in kind of your own shoe there, huh?
I am definitely in my own shoe.
Well, there's a little bit of news before we get into this episode. A couple things. Fargo and Louie were both renewed. Both those shows are going to have season. Well,
oh.
Fargo will have season 2, and Louie will have season whatever, 5, 6?
5, I think, yeah.
So that's good.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
We have, if you just follow our Facebook page, I try to post news and stuff up on there. And you can get to that at Facebook/West Coast Project. Or just go to westcoastproject.com, and you can always see whatever's going on.
Yeah, good idea.
And in the other news, we learned that, I don't know if you heard about this or not, Michelle, from Tennessee, but Jason Biggs, Larry, is a real-life jackass in real life.
I didn't hear anything.
He pulled a real jackassy thing. He tweeted when the Malaysian airliner got shot down. He tweeted, trying to make a joke, he made a joke about anybody wanting to buy my Malaysian Airlines frequent flyer miles.
Ooh.
Jason Biggs. So he got in all kinds of trouble from everyone for that. Then he just like Larry, man. Then he tried to apologize all lame-assedly. But basically he said, you know, hey, all, I'm deleting my previous tweets. People were offended, so that was not my intent. Sorry to those of you that were. So that was one of those apologies, like, I'm sorry if you were offended, not I'm sorry because I was absolutely wrong.
Yeah, I hate those apologies. I'm sorry that you took it that way. I hate that. Yeah.
Then he gets a little bit more and more apologetic as he catches more shit from people. So that was number one. Number two was, this is obviously a horrible tragedy, and everyone, including myself, is sad and angry about it, sending more positive thoughts to the victims. Then number three, victims and their families, P.S., of sending more positive thoughts to victims and their families. No one is making me send these tweets. I simply understand that my comments might have come off as insensitive and ill-timed. For that, I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we said something that, you know, that was maybe not the right thing to say? I mean, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but that does sound kind of... Definitely one of those situations where he needs the benefit of the doubt extended to him, maybe.
Yeah, I guess. I just have no respect for that guy. And maybe,
yeah,
it's Larry bleeding into the, you know, into the...
I started to say, it's not the same guy. I mean, he's not Larry.
Well, for the guy making that comment in real life, either.
Right, the actor.
On more cheerful news, I learned that Poussey is a city in France where Poussey in the show, her father was in the show, was stationed. And that's how she got her name. She was named after the town of Poussey in northeastern France where her father was stationed when she was born, and often finds herself on the receiving end of mockery by the other inmates because of its alternative pronunciation.
Yeah, we heard that in season one, right?
I don't know. I read that somewhere. If it's old news, I'm sorry. But I just thought it was
fun.
We had a lot of talk about Poussey the other night.
Yeah.
So the show opens with the ladies in the prison opening cleanser and making cigarettes from the tobacco.
Yep.
How did you like this episode, Michelle?
It was okay. It was a good episode. It wasn't one of my favorite episodes. The conflict, I guess, is okay. I mean, it is what it is. It's part of the show.
Sorry about that.
But
what do you mean the conflict is what it is?
Well, all of the fights that we see between these people, I don't really like I guess I like the story with V, but I don't really like everything. V is such an evil character that knowing what I know about her and how this ends up and everything, it's anything to do with her and the way she is and the manipulations and stuff that we see her doing troubles me.
But that is the story of her.
I know. So that's not fair. So that's true. But I can't help that. I enjoy it, obviously, or I wouldn't watch it. I wouldn't have the feelings I do over it. But I despise what she stands for and what she does in this. What did you think about it?
Well, she stands for some good stuff. She does some good stuff in that she calls people on their shit, but she's always in the manipulative mode, so that's not the cool part. But anyway, they're making these cigarettes, and they're charging $9 a cigarette.
Yeah.
$9 worth of stamps per cigarette.
They sure are. And they don't want to put the filters in them because it'll make them bigger. That's what V says. And they'll have to use more tobacco to make the cigarettes bigger around, so they keep filters out of it for that specific reason. Or that was certainly one of the reasons, she said. And they're like, well, you're charging $9 a piece. Couldn't you, you know? And they also go into the fact that she's making all the money on this. So that was part of that scene as well. She's making 90% of everything that they're selling.
Yeah, she's making $8.10 every cigarette.
That's a lot of money.
That's supply and demand in action, man. If you got a tobacco a tobacco need, you're really in trouble if you're in prison.
Yeah, how long would it take before you didn't have that need, wonder?
I don't know. Ask anyone who smokes.
Yeah, I don't know.
So Suzanne's rolling her share at the table there, and she thinks her cigarettes are hers. Because she made them, I guess. And it's a very childish, like, I just made these. These are mine. I can't give them up. That happened to me in real life, Michelle, when I had a paper route. I had my friends help me. It was Christmas. It was really busy. So on Christmas, you always get tips from your customers on your paper route. So I had my friends helping me deliver the papers, and the people would give them the tip. You know, a lot of times you don't know who your paper boy is, I guess, so you just give it. So the one kid who was helping me, he's like, but they gave those tips to me. Those are my tips. Even though I had the paper route all year, and he was helping me one day. So I had to like give him, I had to explain to him kind of like what V did with Suzanne, like, you're doing a job and you're helping me. They're paying me really that tip, not you.
How old was he?
I don't know. It's probably 10, 9 or 10.
And he thought he got the tip for the whole year.
Yeah, like the guy would give him the 20 or whatever it was and be like, jeez. Oh.
That's, I don't know. Did you learn anything from that? Like maybe do it yourself on Christmas or something? I mean, I don't know. That would be a tough one to tell your friend, or no?
No, it wasn't tough to tell him. The interpretation or misinterpretation was interesting. And the point here, I guess, is Suzanne has the mind of a child, like, oh, I made these, so they're mine.
Right.
Not a job, like if you were putting an aircraft together in a factory, it's not your airplane.
Well.
It's your job, right?
Right.
So anyway, I thought that was interesting. V pulls out the, this is making something of yourself, getting respect. And this is one good thing that V does, is she does relay good messages within her manipulations. It's just sad that it's manipulative.
Oh, I disagree. I think she's using these good messages to manipulate. She's using the praise and the promise of status, or however you might put that.
Yeah, but the message is good. The message could be used for good or evil. She uses it for evil.
Well, right, which in turn makes the message not good because it was used for evil.
Well, it's a good message, though.
I guess. Standalone, maybe, but yeah.
So something went over my head here that I couldn't figure out. I was trying to do this episode on a rewatch, but V says something about she has a cloak of invisibility. And what is it? Is that just the favors that everybody owes her?
Oh, I didn't even catch that at all. So you're
ahead of
me. I think
Tasty says it. You have an cloak of invisibility, or somebody says it, and they just kind of leave it like unanswered.
Well, because V doesn't handle anything, though. V allows the girls to take all the risk. V says at that point, she's like, I make the money because I take the risk. And is it Black Cindy or is it Janae? One of them says, you know, no, you have, I guess that's where she does, says that cloak of invisibility. And she says, you know, we're the ones taking the risk. And they are. They're the ones with the risk. What does V even do except sit back and collect the money? She orchestrated it. She's obviously the mastermind of it. But
yeah, that's true. If it all ever unwound, though, they implicated her, she would be in the most trouble because she was the ringleader.
I don't know. I mean, what does implication mean in there? See, it's not like out here. I mean, that's their own set of rules and stuff. If you're caught with the stuff, you're guilty.
Yeah, I guess.
She's never caught with anything. Her hands don't get dirty on anything.
I guess. Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know.
So Caputa's having a meeting with the guards, and he's mad that they don't keep the prisoners in prison. And I guess it's basically because the last thing we saw from last episode was Jimmy sitting at the bar with the leaves in her hair and enjoying the band.
Right. Well, yeah, this we assume is like the next day. And he comes in and, yeah, he's upset that Jimmy has just walked straight out the door of the prison.
So they all start blaming each other. Like Bennett blames him for inviting everyone to the bar and leaving him by himself. And
well, yeah, Caputo messes up by saying five officers in the bar had to quietly, or however he put it, get her and get her back where she needed to be. And Bennett's like, I mean, that just, he completely told on himself right there. And Bennett's like, well, maybe, you know, respectfully, if you hadn't taken all the guards to watch you play music, there would have been more people here.
He didn't say respectfully, did he?
I think he actually said the word respectfully.
No, he shouldn't have.
I think he did. I know he should not have. You're right. But I think he did.
So they say that Jimmy said she took the trolley from 27th Street.
Yeah.
So anyway, Caputa gives everyone a 5-shot quota. Now, a shot is just a verbal warning, right? And you get so many of them, you get ramped up to another level of discipline.
I think it's 3 shots and you go to the shoe, I think, but I'm not sure.
But Black Cindy gets one in the next 30 seconds of this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Just for kicking a chair or walking. I forget what she did.
She was just walking down the hall, and the guard, his name's Donaldson, he's that bigger, balding guard, and he yells at her that she's late. And
she's going to be late.
Yeah, she's not even late yet. She's like, I got 45 seconds, and he said, but you don't have time to get there.
Yeah, you'll never make it.
Right, and then evidently White Cindy come walking by, and she's like, well, she's going to be late, and he's like, well, I'm not looking at her, I'm looking at you, and she, you know, calls him on racism and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Now, some of our prisoners, Michelle, have sympathetic reasons why they're in prison, but Black Cindy, this episode, we learn her backstory, and she has a very, very unsympathetic path to prison. She's a TSA agent in Pittsburgh, and she's just bitchy and bossy and lazy and abusive with the passengers.
She's rude. She's aggressive. There's nothing appealing.
She
about.
Steals from the vendors at the airport from her cart.
She does.
Yeah. But we find out she is in cahoots with another TSA agent, and it makes you wonder how deeply rooted this little part of the story is. Like, TSA agents really going through our luggage in partnerships and comparing booty that they get from everybody's suitcase?
I wouldn't have even thought that. I mean, I wouldn't have thought that. You know, and it shows Black Cindy has a bag on the floor. As she's going through luggage, she finds objects that she wants and puts them in her bag.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just right out there in the open. It's horrible. You have a hard time finding much to like about her.
But her coworker finds a vibrator, and Cindy's like, all right, I already stole that one. It's not, you can't get it wet or something.
She has like 12 of them or something, yeah.
That's sick. Why would you want to steal a vibrator?
Couldn't tell you. Couldn't answer that.
And then she's feeling a guy up at the scan booth or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, she's way overdoing that. I know they're showing it like that, but it's terrible. It's a terrible thing. It reminded me of the way the guards were treating Piper in that one scene at the beginning of season one when she first gets put in this construction area or whatever, and they're like, I mean, it was horrible. It was nauseating.
And she's asleep on the job. And yeah, we're going to see some karma come back to Cindy, though, because she kind of creates her own situation. So next we see the newspaper meeting room. Or not the newspaper, but the newspaper guy with Piper in the meeting room.
Right.
And she wants him to help her get the furlough swayed in the right direction, right?
I didn't really gather that she wanted him to do that. I mean, how could he do that? I thought that he was just asking her what to help him, and she was saying that she had this furlough she didn't want to mess up. But yeah, well, she...
I got that she wanted him to write a story on how the prison system isn't working.
I think what I took from that was that's what she thought he was trying to do, was do a story on how bad prison life was. That was kind of how she was taking it. So she started telling him the injustices or whatever that are done there. And he's like, you know, he calls, what do you even call it? The prison system's the greatest stain on the American collective consciousness since slavery or something like that. But he says it's still going to be that way, and he's not going to be able to change that. But what he can write about, you know, he tells her, he says, nobody cares. Nobody cares that you don't get furloughed. Nobody cares that you're, you know, mistreated or whatever. Nobody cares that prisoners are starving. But he can write something definitive about misappropriations of the $2 million.
Well, yeah, and he's right about that. Nobody does really care. People do, I'm sure, but prisoners aren't the most sympathetic group of people that you want to rally behind.
No, they're not. And if you ever read anything, particularly the comments on news articles about deplorable prison conditions and stuff like that, you'll find that people are belligerently angry over prisoners getting any kind of even humane almost treatment.
Well, yeah, like cable TV and even TV itself sometimes.
Or air conditioning or whatever. I mean, you just see it. If you notice it, these people that comment on this, I mean, vast majority are very negative toward any amount of money or anything being spent on housing these prisoners. So.
Well, yeah, or like, how about like a sex change or like condoms or, you know, it gets pretty polarizing, I guess. There's basic human needs, and then there's comfort, and then there's just sustenance. And I guess I would be on that scale. I'd be closer to just sustenance. Just like prison shouldn't be a hotel, a comfortable place. It's kind of I don't know what reform means, but it's not supposed to be a comfortable stay until you just run your time out.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I honestly have a lot of opinions on that are not relevant, but I guess we'll just go on from there. They're not relevant to what we're talking about. So,
well, what he really wants from Piper is contracts and checks that were written, people that had received checks. He's looking for the $200K that's supposed to go to the gym that isn't there. And
The renovation to the gym that they never built.
And Piper's biggest concern is not fucking up her furlough chances by giving him stuff that goes back on her. So next scene, we see Sophia in her hair salon, speaking of prison perks. And Gloria wants a new do. And so Sophia suggests a faux hawk, which would have been pretty cool.
Gloria didn't go for it, though.
No, but Gloria got a pretty cute little haircut, though.
She did. It looked really good. I agree.
And she gets the message that red has roses growing.
Violets,
whatever. It's a code to come meet with her.
Yep.
Next, we see Nichols meeting Tasty in the bathroom.
Yep.
And Tasty wants stamps for cigarettes, and their cigarettes are hidden in tampons.
Yeah, that's where we find out, because they were asking back in that first scene how they were going to do this. Evidently, it was just starting up, and they were asking, how are we supposed to keep these out there? Because, you know, they were telling V, we don't want to go to SHU having these products on us. And they didn't tell us what they were going to use. And this is the scene that shows us that they're using tampon tubes to hold the cigarettes and pass them off. Because, I mean, you can imagine girls passing tampons back and forth. You wouldn't think anything about that. Nobody would. You could do it right out in the open.
Yeah, I guess so. But the problem is they don't have matches. So they use the Litchfield lighter.
Yeah, but did you try that?
No, but I've done that in real life, too, but on a bigger scale.
On a bigger scale?
Yeah, with a car battery to light a campfire.
Oh, geez. Who are you, Les Stroud or Bear Grylls or something?
Well, if you're not a smoker and you don't usually have matches, you don't often think, okay, I need matches to go camping, especially if it's a last-minute camping trip. So we put a wire across the terminals on a 12-volt battery, and it heats up, and it heated up the leaves in the wood and started a fire.
And it worked?
Yeah, it's exactly what they're doing with their battery and their gum wrapper. It's just the current in the between the terminals of the battery through the wrapper, which is conductive, makes it too hot, and it heats up and flames up.
Is that all they did was just hold the battery and hold the...
Yep.
Well, geez, you would think. I mean, how many people store batteries in, like, a kitchen drawer or something that could have maybe a piece of, you know, some sticky notes or a bill or whatever thrown
in there?
It
has to conduct electricity, though.
Yeah, but, I mean, you just said it's just the battery and two and a piece of paper end to end.
No, a piece of wire.
Oh, it has
to
have a
wire. And they're using a gum wrapper that's a metallic, you know, like a gum wrap, like a stick of gum comes in that silvery metallic wrapper.
Oh. Okay.
It's got to conduct. It can't just be a sticky note.
Okay. Well, good. That was going to freak me out.
So the next scene, we see Red and the old ladies, the Golden Girls, talking about Ratatouille. I can't help you much here. I've never seen the movie Ratatouille.
Me either.
But they're discussing the specifics of Ratatouille. And Sophia comes in to see Red. And Sophia gives or gets some stuff from Red, right? Some cold cream. I couldn't really tell what all that was.
Yeah, I don't know, but she gets a couple products from her, and then Red throws in like an extra bag of gummies or something, which are evidently a big deal.
Yeah, because Red has no cash, but lots of goods for services. Yep.
Yeah, she wants it for the services, but she also says she wants some commissary, because remember, her son wasn't putting the money in the commissary.
Right.
Like, I mean, I don't know if that's actually happened yet. I might have just spoiled something.
That's all right. But. Well, it doesn't matter. If you have stuff that people want, you don't need money.
Well,
so
true.
Cigarettes we see are changing hands left and right all through the prison.
Yeah.
And we see some interesting ways people are. Another problem they have is disposing of the smoke. That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But do they all smoke in there? It looks like they were all kind of wrapped up into getting these cigarettes, and they're all excited about the tobacco, the new line of tobacco.
Not everybody. Remember, they brought it up in front of, Rosa, and she's like, are you kidding me? And then the other girl who comes in a little bit later on, she said she doesn't even smoke. She was doing it for a favor, but see, it's turned into currency. So even if they don't smoke, they're going to still want them. But yeah, you're right. It did show a lot of people. I mean, like the vast majority of people smoke.
Yeah, you're right. It does become a tertiary currency, like, I'll trade you for cigarettes even though I don't want them because I can trade them for other things.
Right.
And then we also see that V's Enterprise, they're shipping in tobacco and other types of containers, like even the pepper, because Gloria says the pepper tastes like granny's ashes.
Oh, is that what they were doing?
Well, that's what Gloria in the kitchen said. Everything smells like tobacco and smoke now because it's coming in every which way.
Ooh.
But something tasted like granny's ashes. Like it was either from the smoking or the tobacco coming in. It could have been either way.
Yeah.
So Santa Claus Bennett brings in more stuff in the next scene. And Alita says, fuck Santa. Bennett shows up even if you've been naughty.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got the MP3 player and the what else? Other stuff. And they want more and more stuff from him.
Yeah, they start asking for more. And now they're asking him for porn, and they want gay porn. They want him to go buy gay porn.
No, they didn't. She say I want porn with just guys. Well, I guess that's gay. Not gay for women.
Yeah. Yeah, but he said, so you want me to buy gay, or I'm not going to buy gay porn. And she's like, why? It's hot, right? I mean, that's not what she said.
Okay, you laugh at me, Michelle from Tennessee, but I ask you this. Is Playboy gay porn?
No, and I am not laughing at you. It was just funny. You said just the way you said it.
I know, but Playboy is just girls, and it's not...
Right. It's not gay porn. It's not, but I thought that's what she had insinuated. I could be wrong. You could be
You could actually be right, though, but Flacco wants just guys. She doesn't want to look at women, which is ungay. Like, it's almost like she wanted to see nude guys because she sees nude women all the time in prison.
Well, and she said she didn't want to see women because that means the women are exploited, and that's a turnoff, so to speak. And it's like, well, what do you think the guy... I mean, you know, I guess it might be different. I don't know. I've never thought about it. But, I mean, wouldn't the men be just as exploited?
I guess.
In porn? I mean, what's the difference?
I don't know. Next, we see Brooke in the cafeteria, and she's a vegetarian. She needs nuts and legumes, Michelle.
She does. Well, it's hard to get by on just that iceberg lettuce and frozen peas.
So Piper asks Daya about the kitchen vendors, and Daya just looks at her with a kind of a dumb look, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and then, Piper's trying to find out some information for sure, even though she has told, I think his name's Alexander, I'm going to call him that anyway, because I think that's his name, the reporter, Alexander, she's told him that she's not going to help him. And he says, call if she changes her mind. But she says she's not going to, but then you see her start doing this little dig thing.
Yeah, Pusey makes a funny comment, too, that she'll stop eating meat if a cow ever breaks her out of prison.
That's what she says. I mean, can you imagine trying to be vegetarian? It's kind of like the gluten thing.
No, I would just, in prison, I think you just got to survive. You're going to do some stuff you might not want to do.
Right.
And then, so the nun gets a shot from Fisher for stealing the cornbread, but she was just taking her own cornbread and saving it, right?
Yeah, I don't think they're allowed to take, well, I know, they're not allowed to take it out of the cafeteria, but the thing about this is that she's done it before, and she's done it before in front of Fisher, and Fisher let her go. And then, you know, she explained to her that she has blood sugar issues, and I don't really understand why they can cook in their bunks with those little heated wand things they use, but they can't, and they can buy things like tuna fish and whatever they have, but they can't take the food out of there. Evidently, because it's evidently a big deal. But the problem with that was, to me, that Fisher let her do it before, and then without any kind of warning, she gave her a shot.
Yeah, she's just under the stress of having to write more shots.
Yeah, Fisher even has to write 6 shots, where everybody else has to write 5 shots. And Caputo did that. You know he did that because she brought loose check to his band gig or whatever.
Yeah, he wanted loose Fisher, not loose check. So we see Piper helping Jimmy cut her food up, and we're starting to get prepped to feel sad for Jimmy from what we're going to see a little bit later in this episode.
Well, yeah, it was sad even there. That was so sad. She's sitting there trying to eat. She's a skinny old woman, and she's trying to eat, and she's like gnawing on a bone.
And that looked like a pretty nice pork chop she had there.
The pork chop looks pretty good, I gotta tell you, but she's obviously not able to handle it. And Piper shows her the kindness of helping her and the dignity of that, which was very sweet.
So next we see Black Cindy in prison mode, just like she kind of was in TSA mode. She's selling her cigarettes for bunk cleaning services. And I guess she's not getting the money or the stamps that V expects her to bring back. She's just making her own little enterprise.
Yeah. And
so she's selling this cleaning service to the meth girls.
Yeah, she's selling it. There was Angie in there cleaning her bunk, and then the other girl comes in. That was the girl who says she doesn't even smoke. She just wanted the cigarettes for trade of something. But yeah, she is taking the cigarettes that are V's. I mean, I guess that's how we have to look at it, right? They're V's cigarettes, and she's taking them for personal gain. She's trading them off for her own for her own gain and not getting the stamps at all.
It's like getting the money at the store and putting that right in your pocket and not the cash register.
Well, yeah, I mean, she gets the jelly and something else from the kitchen. She's just taking stuff for it. It's like they're hers. And
yeah.
We say that's going to be a problem.
And so the tertiary trade that that other girl was using the cigarettes for was to trade for waxing her mustache.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't understand what she said she wanted to be able to wax her mustache.
And we can all understand that.
Okay.
I mean, we in life, that's an important feature to have.
Yeah, tell
so,
me.
Next, we see Black Cindy in real life with her sister, in quotes, air quotes, mm-hmm. and her grandma, I guess. Or
well, mom, and her, right.
Her mom, but whatever.
Her mom, right.
But she's given a stolen iPad to her daughter. We saw her take the iPad earlier, and it turns out that the girl, the little girl, is her daughter, her 9-year-old. And mm-hmm. The other lady's her mom, but the little girl thinks that grandma is the mom and Black Cindy is her sister.
Right.
We learn that
and she thinks Black Cindy's her cool, fun big sister that comes in and brings her gifts and does fun things that her mom won't let her do.
Yeah. But Black Cindy's a shit, man, because even if she was just her sister, she didn't even see her for her last birthday. She missed her birthday. Even if she was just her sister, you'd think she'd be there for her birthdays. But they go for bubblegum ice cream, and Grandma looks at the iPad and sees that it's not fresh from the Apple store. It's fresh from some Asian family.
Right. It's not a new product, for sure.
They don't put Asian people's pictures or pictures on iPads like they do in wallets. Sometimes you get a picture.
Oh, they don't?
No.
Oh, okay.
So Lorna tries to see Chapman for getting a writing job on the newspaper, but she's not sure what she should write about. She's trying to stay away from romance for now.
Thank goodness.
But the beauty tip column, it's actually a pretty good idea.
It's a great idea. It's perfect for her. And she was so excited about it. Her character is so uplifting. That's why I guess I was saying I really like seeing stuff about her character because you can feel uplifted and then kind of dropped down, I guess, when you find out what she's really all about. Whereas with V, it has this just constant sense, just constant undercurrent of something bad.
V's a lot more interesting to me than Lorna, though. Lorna's just a big ball of crazy.
Yeah, I don't know that. I agree with you that V is very interesting and her character is very interesting and she shocks me a little bit later on, like seriously shocks me, which I love when TV does that. But you can't feel any happiness. You can't feel any up with her. Anyway.
So next we see Nichols meeting Poussey in the library for cigarettes. And here Nichols is showing off her vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Cigarettes are butts, fags, burns.
Mm-hmm.
But Poussey doesn't want to help her because she doesn't want to be she doesn't like being associated with V, but I guess she kind of tells her that she's not working with V.
Well, yeah, and she says essentially that V is using the girls to do her dirty work. And you can tell, we've been able to tell kind of from the beginning that Poussey really does have an issue with V.
Yeah. But then we see another cool Machiavellian move where Nikki talks to Poussey. She makes the high school boyfriend analogy.
Yep, she does.
Where if you want to be with the girl, suck up to the boyfriend, even if you don't like him, and get closer to the girl that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good advice.
Yep. And Poussey denies that she's in love. See, this is why I said before when we had that whole conversation that Poussey was in love with Tasty. And she denies it here. She says she's not in love with her. And
but we know she
Nikki
is.
Nikki knows better. Right.
So Bennett comes in, puts his foot down. He's going to renege as Santa. He's out of that bullshit. And he calls them on their bluff. And really, Michelle, that's the only true way out of blackmail, right? Is to just put your foot down and say, I'm not doing it anymore.
Absolutely.
And Sofia Vergara takes the brunt of this, and she gets sent to the shoe. That's
she
Maritza.
She does, but she was, right, she was horrible. She was horrible. He calls them on their bluff, but then she calls him right back, and she gets real smart mouth with him. It's, you know, ask what Caputo's going to think when he finds out all this stuff. And that's when Bennett finally stands his ground with it.
Where did Bennett get this little burst of courage?
I guess from his fear of buying gay porn.
No.
I don't know.
I don't know either, but that's a legitimate question.
Also, because Caputo has kind of told them that they got to toughen down, and he's making it harder on them.
He stood up to Caputo, too.
Yeah, he did. You're right.
Anyway, he's got a little bit more balls than he's ever had.
Right.
I liked him standing up, though. I didn't like seeing Sofia Vergara run all over him.
No, none of them.
Next, we
Alita either.
We see Caputo working his plants, and he meets Chapman. Chapman kind of asks about the status of her furlough. And Caputo tells her the newspaper is a good way to communicate to inmates that guards are people, too.
Mm-hmm.
We flip over to Larry and Polly, my favorite part of the episode.
Was it?
Never is, Michelle, from Tennessee.
I know. I like it. I like that part of it.
Of course you do. That's why you're my podcast partner, because you like what I hate.
I guess.
Larry and Polly. So she slaps him for showing up with a hard-on and then immediately falls in love with him. Larry's spiraling out. He's such a wimp. I'm spiraling out. What a baby.
Yeah, I mean, what could he have said in his defense there? I mean, he's already done what he did, so what's his defense?
I'm attracted to you, baby. And then she says he's funny and boring in all the right ways. Well, that's a put down.
She doesn't mean it as a put down. That's not a put down to her.
Well, it is a put down, though.
I don't know. She's got a husband that wants to leave a 3-month-old
and go
away to Alaska. Yeah, so he's boring. He wants to sit home. I can totally see why that would be an attraction to her.
All right, Polly from Tennessee, Michelle from Tennessee.
I can see it.
Anyway, that's the last thing I wanted to see is them groping each other. The last thing, Michelle.
The very last thing? Well, we saw it.
Next, we see the Golden Girls discussing the internet with Red. And all the info in the world is in the wires.
You know, it still is pretty impressive if you think about it.
How all that info's in all those wires?
Yeah, it's just right there.
And now Red's in demand for matches. And I guess people are looking for matches, but that's how she finds out about the cigarette trade.
Yep. Yeah, Boo tells her, doesn't she?
Yeah, Boo's looking for matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a scary thing to import in the prison, isn't it?
Matches.
I mean, I don't know if it's scarier than other things necessarily, but yeah.
Well, Red kind of says that I don't deal in matches. I don't need people burning down kitchens, and she kind of has firsthand experience in that.
Right.
So next we see another newspaper staff meeting with Piper, and Flocka doesn't like it that all the white girls are in charge. We see Daya's artistic cartoon where the walrus is Healy, which turns out funny coming up soon. And then they have the could care less argument. And Michelle, I got to apologize to you because last time we talked about how hard it is to edit and how much time it took and all that. And then I was editing at like 1 a.m. and I kind of fell asleep and I woke up in the next morning and I continued on. But I left in a bunch of crap. I totally blew the edit. I was going to edit out we had some personal stuff we were talking about.
It doesn't matter.
Part of it was me correcting you and your Tennessean grammar. And here she is correcting Flocka's, I forget who she was even talking to, but the could care less.
Yeah, could care less versus couldn't care less. It was Lorna.
Right.
Lorna was saying, I could care less. And Flocka was telling her I couldn't care less.
Right.
Right.
Right. Anyway. It's called grammar, Punta. She always ends with an insult when she doesn't quite get her way. Like when she didn't get the job at the cigarette from the cigarette guy.
And whatever. She's actually right. Smoke. She's actually right about it.
She is right.
But then Piper kind of, you know, straddles the fence with it.
Yeah, she pulls out the colloquialism, like.
Yeah, and then grammar evolves. Grammar evolves, Mike. That's why I said what I said last week. My grammar has evolved.
Think different, like Steve Jobs. But Michelle from Tennessee, you can't be saying had went. I still stand up.
Had went. That's what I say. I'll try not to say it, but I say it in my everyday life. I do. Okay.
And then we see another pop-up of more sad Jimmy. She just kind of pops her head in for a second.
Yeah, and this is where she's calling Piper Roberta. So evidently she has connected Piper with some old friend. She calls her that the first time in the cafeteria. And then she calls her Roberta again here. I mean, she's just completely going into a state of delusion. And it's sad.
So next we see V admiring her baseball stamps. She's getting so much revenue from these cigarettes. She's like picking out certain parts of stamps and looking at them and saying, oh, these are great. I really like these. But she tells Cindy that she's not selling enough and that she can't be trusted. So she gets her shifted to maintenance.
Well, yeah, she realizes that Cindy has shorted her and she's gotten her own favors she's sold it for personal gain in place of for V. And V does not like it. And Tasty even comes around and says, you don't want to shortchange her. We know what's happened. They've shown us some backstory on V with people who shortchange her. That's what I'm saying. Every little thing about her is so dark, and you don't want to short her. I agree.
But all of their outside prison traits are now entering into the prison. Cindy's acting just like she did in real life. She's short-circuiting the system, quote-unquote, and she's stealing.
She is stealing, yeah.
So Poussey overhears all this, and she actually gets Cindy's job. It's not only her getting the job, but it's V, I suppose, trying to win over Poussey, getting her close. And then Poussey winning over V by, you know, Nichols' advice from earlier to get close to the boyfriend.
Oh, I didn't think about that, but...
That's why she was there, I think. She was, like, plotting, like, how do I move in on the boyfriend?
Okay.
So she'd get back to Tasty. Anyway, next we see a Cindy in real life flashback where she and her daughter are jamming in the car. She pulls a real shit move by pulling up to an old friend on the block and then saying, I'll be right back. Stay in the car for 20 minutes. I'll be right back. She just leaves her.
I know. Bullshit. I know. I couldn't believe anybody. I mean, can you leave a kid for 20 minutes in a car? That's terrible.
I don't think you'd leave a kid for 1 minute in a car.
I mean, I wouldn't think. I mean, even though she's not 6 months old or a year or two old or not in a car seat or anything, I mean, that just seems like that's not a good idea.
She's 9 years old. You can't leave her anywhere for any time. Jimmy's getting ready for a date. We keep seeing her pop in like, okay, keep your eye on Jimmy. We kind of know what's going to happen to her. Next, O'Neill puts the moves on. Is it Wanda? Is the guard O'Neill and the guard Wanda?
I call her Belle, but yeah, her name's Wanda Belle. Yeah.
He tries to say he's sorry, and she wants him to make a decision, I guess, about moving in and just being together.
Yeah.
And he wants a second chance, so they get together.
He'll bring his Vitamix.
Come here, Panda.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what, Michelle? Their physical contact was way easier to watch than Larry and Polly for me.
Okay.
And it's not very pretty.
Well, O'Neill has learned some things about the female anatomy that he thinks Belle will enjoy.
Yeah, he knows the structure.
Yeah, he was listening in to Sophia last time talking about it. Jeez. But they fall to the floor, and then we see Jimmy take off.
Yeah.
Poor Jimmy.
So now Daya's pulling their bullshit with Bennett again. Like, their relationship is so unhealthy. She's mad that he has the power. She's blaming him. And he has the power just because he hasn't done as much wrong in his life as she has. And she's relinquished all the power. I don't know. I don't like her being mad at him for this.
She gets mad at him for everything. When he doesn't know what she's thinking. When he does know what she's thinking. When he does what she wants him to do. And... then she calls him, you know, a pussy. And when he doesn't do what she wants him to do, then she calls him ugly names. I mean, she just, she's, I like her character, but I very much dislike her character's interaction with Bennett. Very much dislike it.
Yeah. Next, we see two more unlikable people, Figueroa and her husband, discussing politics and how they actually hate their constituency. They hate the people they're going to represent, or he's going to represent. She hates the people she represents, too. But they're worried about all the wrong things. They're worried about their looks and their hair and donations and not any of the real things that you want, you know, if you should worry about if you're going to go into politics. The other, what's her husband's name? Do you remember?
I don't. I have him down as he fig and she fig. So I have him down. Sorry.
But the opponent of her husband gets a big $1.5 million donation, mm-hmm. which probably puts more pressure on Figueroa to steal more money.
Well, yeah, Gavin, the assistant, comes in and he tells him that. And it's a shock to him. And it does. I mean, yeah, the pressure and all that kind of stuff. Fig is, you know, she's worried about the reporter snooping around. And this is where her husband says that there's no way they can find out anything or find anything or something like that. And he also promises her that they're going to win so that they can get to work fixing what's important. And, you know, she was saying some stuff. You were saying that she wasn't interested, that she had, you know, that she wasn't interested in the people that she was representing, but she was saying, let's don't give them loofahs. Let's give them adequate representation
before they end up
there to begin. No, but that is what she was saying. I mean, I can't see her being very, you know, sympathetic toward that kind of thing, but I don't know because that only because we don't like her. I think, and we've seen what she's capable of, but that is what she was saying. She was saying things that are theoretically, anyway, more important, because it is more important that these people get adequate representation than it is that they get bath products.
Right.
Now having a toilet to use where sewage doesn't bubble up in it, I don't know. I mean, you know, we'd have to weigh that one. We'd have to weigh that one. That one's pretty big.
We also find out that they have sex problems, which is basically because they don't have sex enough.
Yeah. She says he'll have to actually have sex with her if they're ever to have a kid. When Gavin came in and told them that, I knew right then. Did you know that he had a thing going with Gavin? He fig?
Yeah, he's all Monica Lewinsky for the Mr. Fig.
Yeah, well, and that I thought they had something going on, too. Did you?
Well, that's what I mean by Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, okay.
What do you think Monica Lewinsky had with Bill Clinton?
I thought you were just saying that Gavin was, I don't know, mesmerized.
Well, he is. I don't know if they had a thing. He might have wanted a thing, but I don't know.
Yeah, they had a thing.
Okay. Next, we find out that Larry can't open a jar. Big news flash there. And Polly's husband comes over now. What's his name?
Pete.
Do they live near Larry?
They'd have to.
And like almost the same building or something? Because how would he just pop over with a six-pack like that?
It's not the same building because Larry lives in a house or a duplex or a townhome or something. And Pete and them live in an apartment. So it's not exactly the same, but I think they're showing to be pretty close.
Next, we see Jimmy at the chapel ready to dive into the pool, which isn't there. It's just the chapel. And she's having a conversation mm-hmm. with her husband about the water being cold or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And another, she jumps.
Just a flash of her. She jumps about 4 feet. She doesn't jump to kill herself or anything.
No. Well, no. It's only 4 or so feet. You're right. But, I mean, she's what? The 70-year-old woman? With these brittle bones and stuff, and she's standing up there, and she doesn't just, you know, step in, which would probably break a hip anyway. She jumps and does this jump up in the air and lands. And
I think it's the symbolism of jumping into, like, the abyss of insanity. She's, like, jumps into something she doesn't think. She thinks is there, but isn't there.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Next, we see V meets Cindy at night. I guess it's their just their sleeping quarters?
Yeah, they're just in their bunks, and it shows them go by and do the count, and V's waiting for that, because then as soon as they count her, she gets up and walks to Cindy's bunk.
Now, V's a bitch, Michelle, but she's right. Cindy has no ambition, and V calls her out. V calls her
being a loser. I was going to say, yes, this is the one area that I thought she had something uplifting, even though it wasn't uplifting speech, it was something that could definitely benefit Cindy if she would pay attention to it.
Also, there's a little message there that you're right when you have the power. Doesn't matter if you're really right or wrong, but you're right if you have the power, and you have to kind of play the game to get the power.
I hate that.
You could call V wrong. V's wrong. She's wrong for being that way and doing those things and manipulating people. But she has the power, so she's always right.
She has the power, but she is obviously wrong. But she's so dark. Her character is so dark. I just don't even know how to. Every time you watch her, it's like with dread, because you know she's up to something.
Well, pick your powerful gangster. That's how they all are. Al Capone, Nucky. You know, they get power and they use it, and that's how they operate.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
Next, we see this results of Cindy leaving her daughter behind while she went for 20 minutes, which is probably all night. That she got home and she smelled of pot smoke, and this is Cindy talking to her mom. I can do whatever I want when I'm with my own daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Then her mom kind of says she can't, that you got to be kind of responsible. And which one of them says this? I wrote this down. Why don't we tell her the truth and see who she chooses? I guess that must have been Cindy, huh?
That was Cindy, yes.
And the mom brings up the reality of it all. Like, okay, you can take her to school, piano, you can get her hair braided, you can clean up after she's sick. And she, you know, Cindy doesn't realize all these things that it takes to be a real true parent.
No, of course not. She's never been her parent. But my heart does kind of go out to Cindy in this, because she seems sad to me. She doesn't like being scolded, which is what brings about this tantrum, I think, with her mom. But that is her daughter. And to have somebody tell you how to raise your daughter, even though her mom's raising her daughter, and I get the whole thing, but she kind of seems, well, this and the next scene too, but she just seems sad about it. But her mom tells her, she goes, if you tell her, you have to take her. If you think you can do a better job raising her than me, then you take her and you go. And of course, we find out in just a minute or two that she's not going
to
do that.
Well, her mom also raised Cindy to be this person that she is, which is like a loser, you know, stealing, irresponsible. That's, you can trace some of that back to parenting somewhere.
Maybe. I don't know. Cindy seems like, I mean, I always hesitate to blame the parents because you don't know what has went on. But Cindy seems like the kind of girl, if you hung out with her, you'd have a really good time. It's just not somebody that you can rely on. I mean, every time that the show's on and she's dancing and singing and doing these moves and everything, I find myself getting kind of caught up in that, in her uplifted personality. So she's fun, and that's why the little girl loves her, but she's just not very reliable and not a very moral good person.
Yeah, that's a pretty thin veneer. I think it's a very short-lived fun rush if you have any kind of, if it's easy if you're 10 9 or 10, but any adult would see like right through that.
Well,
look at her friends. Her friends are the gang bangers on the street that go and get high. That guy knew she had the little girl in the car. He didn't care either.
Well, you're right.
Next, we see Fisher listening to the audio on the computer of the phone calls. And here we learn more about ambition. Ambition keeps creeping into this episode more and more. Caputo tells her that his job isn't easy, and it's not easy because he has ambition. And some people lack ambition, Michelle, from Tennessee, like Luschek.
Yeah, Luschek does lack some ambition.
So Caputo is pulling kind of a V there, right? He's depositioning Luschek. but it doesn't work because Fisher likes Luscheck because he knows her. He can talk to her and she can talk to him. She can relate to him.
Yep.
So that kind of blows up in Caputo's face. But what did
but he's planted the seed. He's planted the seed. So
what did we find? What did Fisher? Oops. What did Fisher and us find out about in this pregnancy thing on the tape that she looks shocked by on the computer? Is that Daya?
Oh, I don't know.
She finds out something about pregnancy that's awkward enough to stop her in her tracks, and her eyes get all big.
Yeah, it was something I didn't know. I didn't get that, though, so I don't know.
Next, we see another staff meeting at the newspaper, and we learned that just because it's a comic doesn't mean you need to use Comic Sans, the font that this show, this episode's named after. Healy likes the newspaper layout, and the walrus is hilarious, he thinks.
He thinks it is.
Not knowing it's him.
I know.
We see Gloria in her new haircut. She brings Red the yogurt. She's trying to deal with Red to get some cilantro.
And, I didn't know what she was going to want. But I guess based on the fact that she hated the pepper and all that, and she wants Red to grow her some cilantro.
She looks good with that new haircut. Sophia's a good hairstylist.
Yeah, she is.
And Red doesn't think she's going to ask for anything but gum. Everybody wants gum, but Red doesn't know why. And I guess I don't know if she learns out here why, but pretty soon she's going to know.
That just dawned on me. Oh my gosh, I'm so stupid. I didn't get that. And it's because of the gum wrappers, because they're lighting the cigarettes. That's why everybody wants the gum.
The Litchfield lighter, baby.
I didn't get it because I didn't know it had to be metal. That's interesting. Okay.
So Cindy, fat Cindy. Oh, God. Cindy watches V teaches Suzanne about chess and the long game. I liked how they worked the long game into this lesson.
Yep.
And Cindy asked for her medicine and her job back. Give me my medicine, I'll take my job back. And V complies with that.
She does. Well, she offered it to her before, but she goes along with it now, which. And then Cindy finds out what the medicine actually is.
Yeah, now her job is to refurb the tampon applicators.
It sure is.
And I guess it's not a fun job, but they need the tampon applicators, but not the tampons, because they can just put the cigarette in the applicator.
Well, right. The tampon's gone.
And they don't want to buy new tampons because that's expensive and it cuts into profit. So she's got to clean these old tampon applicators?
Yeah.
Or not even clean them, just reload them with cigarettes?
No, she has to clean. She has to rinse them. I mean, you'd have to rinse them. Rinse them out.
Yeah, that's an entry-level job there. That's not a...
it's not a good job. That's a bad job.
Yeah, and flashback to TSA, she sees a little girl in her family. And what did that mean to you, Michelle?
Well...
Was that before she had her daughter, do you think?
No. No, it was at the same time, I think, because remember they were showing her TSA and then getting the iPod and then going to see her daughter and then back at work and all that. I think it was supposed to be kind of linear like that at the same time. And I think that she saw this dad and daughter having this interaction and the dad, you know, the little girl's being a little obnoxious and she wants her juice and she wants it now and all this. And she realizes what she's missed out on, everything. And the dad asks, Cindy, do you have any children? And she says no.
Yeah, I kind of got the message, but I didn't get the result of it. Was it sadness? Was it like, fuck you, I don't need to be a parent like you, or you're doing things that I would never be able to do? Or what was the message?
No, I think the message was that she didn't try, that she didn't stand up to her mom, that she didn't call her mom, you know, her mom called her bluff about telling her daughter. And so she did not tell her daughter that she was hers and take her. I think they wanted to let us know that. But I think she was just sad. She knew that she didn't have that.
Yeah, that's a good take. That's a good point, too, that she probably didn't tell her mom. She didn't take the responsibility on to raise her daughter. She just left everything the way it was.
Right, because she did tell the father, no, I don't have kids. So I think that was them telling us that she did not go that route. So.
That kid was pretty cute with her dad, too, a little redheaded girl with the one ponytail off the side.
I know. I'm partial to little redheaded girls. I've got one, so...
Yeah, she's bigger than that now.
She's grown, I know, but she was a young. She was 9 at one point.
You still make her go out with the red with the ponytail on the side?
I would if I could.
Next, we see Jimmy getting released on compassionate release and headed out into real life.
Yeah,
with a broken arm, so she did hurt herself jumping off that stage.
Yep, and they're talking. She's got no family. She's got nothing. They're going to take her to a bus stop. Evidently, maybe buy her a bus ticket, and that's the end of her.
Yeah, she has a sister in Finland or something that they don't. Yeah. She never talks to.
A daughter in somewhere that she doesn't have any contact. She has nobody. She has nobody. And as they're closing the door, Jimmy's calling for Roberta, which was just so sad.
Thinking Piper's Roberta.
Right.
Yeah, it was a person leaving jail looking like she's being dragged off to jail.
Well,
the van closing and the doors, the barred in doors closing on her and driving away.
And that music was great. Did you pay any attention to the music? Into the Unknown by the Black Chords.
I didn't know the name of the group, but here it is. Sorry, that ended quick. Netflix chops it right off there, don't they? Mm-hmm. I have the application Netflix on my iPad, and it doesn't. When it's over, man.
Yeah, they were talking about how. I mean, I was reading about how the music really related to that because it's talking about a child going into the unknown, and then we see Roberta, who's very childlike again, going into the unknown, and none of her friends there have any way to keep in contact with her or anything. They're just helpless.
What's the group?
The Black Chords. It's not the, it's just Black Chords.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Well, that's it for episode 7 of season 2.
Yep.
This is Comic Sans. Next week is Appropriately Sized Pots, 21st episode in this series.
We're halfway done.
Yeah, more now. I think we're going to see Rosa in the next episode, right? Her bank robbery career?
I'm not even sure, tell you the truth.
Well, that was it from West Coast Project, Mike and Michelle. Our Twitter accounts are @scathingtweets and?
Michelle from TN.
@MichelleFromTN.
Yep.
And West Coast Project, of course, and Facebook. Just look under Facebook /West Coast Project.
Yep.
And I put in all the news about those episodes of seasons of Fargo and Louie getting renewed. You can just go in there and look at the links on the Facebook page. Or you can write to us at support@West Coast Project or tweet to us, whichever. And that's about it, Michelle, unless you have anything else.
That's it. Love to hear from anybody. We love that. Love the feedback.
Just don't type in Comic Sans when you send email.
No, please don't.
All right, well, I'll see you next week.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Rock, it's only just a glitch.